Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome an accomplished author and entrepreneur from London, UK, Mr. Andrew Shepherd. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ash. Great to be joining you.
Thank you. Andrew is an author and an entrepreneur. All of you know that I'm always very partial to authors. He's written a book titled Lost and Found in China. And during the conversation, I'm going to ask him to show us his book. He's also the co-founder and director of Entrepreneurs Hub Limited. So Andrew, before we talk about your book and entrepreneurship, tell me about your own journey in brief.
Well, in brief, basically, I started off like most people on a conventional corporate career, largely in the technology industry, focused partly on sort of technical roles and then more into the commercial space. And commercial really was my key. And I probably ended up being a bridge between the technical and commercial worlds within technology. But within that, of course, that business, a lot of times there was disposals and acquisitions. And so throughout my tech, my sort of tech career, I was exposed to quite a lot of mergers and acquisitions. Mm-hmm. And some of the businesses I worked for, we bought a business a month, although I wasn't personally doing each of those. But it meant that throughout my normal conventional career, I acquired a lot of fortune expertise in the M&A space, which later was to serve very well with Entrepreneurs Hub.
Very interesting. So, Andrew, let's talk about your book, Lost and Found in China. And sure. Before I ask you my first question, do show us the book.
I'm just going to put it for the benefit of people.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out Mr. Andrew Shepherd's book. And I'm going to check it out myself. So, Andrew, my first question is that you're one of the few, if not the only non-Chinese to visit every mainland province of China in recent times. What was so unique about your journey? Why is it so difficult and rarely achieved?
It's a good question. And the journey started off by accident. I got involved with a team of people who were planning to, we basically did a startup centered on Shanghai. And so my first trip to China was to Shanghai, and I arrived right at Chinese New Year. I had no idea that wasn't a sensible thing to do. Mm-hmm. That's recorded as the biggest human migration on Earth every year. Yeah. I've never seen so many people in airports and trains, but I arrived nonetheless and assumed confidence and, you know, and pressed ahead. But naturally, while I was in China that first time, I traveled to a number of provinces. And it's fair to say that particularly in Shanghai, I really caught the bug. It's a very exciting, very adrenalized, high-tech city. Great people, great food, and the energy is fantastic. But actually, there was a gap. I was headhunted to come back to lead another organization back in the UK. And it was later I went back to China. But each time I went back, I more and more got the bug. And basically, as each time I traveled, I enjoyed it so much that I wanted to travel more. And I was traveling with my girlfriend, and now my wife. She's Chinese, but I met her in the UK. And basically, our journey started, we'd just been visiting the Great Wall at quite a remote place. And it was probably our fifth or sixth province at that point. And there are 33 mainland provinces. And we were just driving away from the Great Wall. And about an hour later, we were on the edge of the Gobi Desert. And there were camels by the roadside. And I remember saying to her, why don't we do all of it? She said, all of what? And I said, why don't we do mainland China? Wow. Why don't we drive all? And she was quiet for nearly 2 minutes. And then very calmly she said, that would take a huge amount of time and effort. We could probably do it, but it's an enormous task. And that was really where the trip, or at least the inspiration, was born, while driving away from this classic knife-edge ridge sort of swirling Great Wall scene that people see in the photos. But I think the piece, you know, why is it so difficult? I think there are a number of reasons. But first of all, we think of scale. So people know the UK is quite a small country, but China is 38 times bigger than the UK. It's an enormous country. There are huge geographic differences. There are climate differences. And clearly, language is an issue. If, you know, for me, I had my wife, but on previous trips, I had to hire an interpreter. So it's critical you have Chinese skills or a Chinese interpreter. And then the next is, you know, I guess for us, we tried to drive it and we drove in a budget rental car. And so there were times we might have used a train, but we always tried to use surface transport with the occasional flight, particularly if we'd already driven it.
Mm.
So on and off, it took us 9 years, or it took me 9 years
wow.
to cover that. So it's an enormous endeavor. So when we say, why is it so difficult? Why are so few people done it? Because it's an enormous commitment and sacrifice to do it, and particularly to visit the corners, because we drove the borders, the coasts, the Great Wall, the Silk Road. You know, we really try to do all of it. And some areas, you know, maybe I wasn't able to visit because, you know, they don't allow Westerners there. But largely, one of the things I would say is, and I'm very grateful, you know, I was given a great amount of freedom to travel widely. And, you know, it was one of the kind of adventures of my life. But also, I think people don't understand the climate in China. In the north, particularly on the edges of Siberia and Russia, you can have temperatures of minus 35, minus 40, and it can be plus 30 in the summer.
Yeah.
And the same in the west, the huge deserts, particularly where it borders like the stands, what we affectionately now call the stands, from Kazakhstan and such like. So it's just an incredible, incredible place. And it's the scale of it is beyond what most people would be motivated to do, to be honest.
And how much distance would you have driven while covering this entire journey?
We think we did about 70,000 kilometers.
My goodness, that's huge. Wow.
I mean, I'm driving. I'm not really counting, you know, the air miles. I'm just counting, you know, largely car and, you know, train. It's you have to think in China, you have to think of a different, in a different scale.
Absolutely.
Right. Clearly, you're from India and India's another country.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. And what would you say was a personal realization or an awareness from your journey?
Well, first of all, you know, we were treated wherever we went with incredible hospitality. And Ash, I have to say, you know, sometimes we would be in some really remote area and someone would invite us in for food or for a hot drink or something like that. And I was really touched by a kind of sincerity and kindness. And I think that kindness made me really reflect, particularly I think one does this in older years. And I think in the younger years, you're very career minded and very ambitious and have to be self-focused. And probably my biggest thing was, my biggest realization personally was about the value of humility. Now, I'm not very good at humility, and anyone knows me will know that, but it became an aspiration and awareness of the value and attractiveness of that. So that was my, if you said one big awareness, was actually, you know, begin a journey towards that. And I still think I'm on that journey towards humility, but I guess it's the sense of, and also a sense of kindness. It changed. So I was deeply affected personally in my journey around China, yeah.
And, you know, I've traveled quite extensively, not to all the provinces, but in China, must have been there about 70 or 80 times. And you're absolutely right. I mean, the generosity and the warmth I have experienced, this was without speaking a word of Mandarin at all. But, you know, I think what you're saying is so right. So then tell me, after this journey, incredible journey, what was the inspiration for writing the book?
Well, it's a funny story. It sounds improbable. We were in Hainan, which is a tropical island. Some people compare it to Hawaii, but it doesn't have the remoteness of Hawaii. It's more like somewhere like the Caribbean. But Hainan is a tropical island, still, you know, one of the Chinese provinces. And we very fortunately were upgraded by a very kind hotel to a fantastic room, which had a large private pool in its backyard. This room even had a backyard, this villa. And I was swimming in this pool, and I can only describe it as an epiphany, almost like a beam of light, which was just write a book. And in that moment, I had the chapter, as well as the idea of the book, I had the chapter titles. When I dried off, wrote down the titles, and those titles never changed from that moment. to when I actually wrote the book, and they're the book, they're the chapter titles of the book now. So I've never had anything like that before in my life. I guess that's why they're called epiphanies. And we decided to write the book. The book wasn't hard to write. You know, it was just the discipline of doing it. But that was it. That was my inspiration with the book. It was like the whole idea never started. Let's do all of China. And there was never the idea of a book either.
And were there any challenges while you wrote this book?
Just the discipline. I mean, first of all, I have a busy day job, so it's the kind of classic thing I did evenings and weekends. But so it was more like a hobby project, if you like. But the key thing, I never had writer's block, but I definitely had something I call writer's discipline. You know, it's really important just to stop everything else and turn the TV off and just sit down and write. But I think, you know, also the other parts, and maybe I'm extending your question a little bit, but I think, you know, not having the technical knowledge of writing a book, having to self-publish, you know, the whole thing about figuring Amazon out and those kinds of things. When you're doing that stuff for the first time, it's so difficult. So, you know, the key thing for me is, I guess, it's just that everything was new. And it's one of, I haven't had that recently in life where literally everything I'm doing was new. I had no experience. And, you know, all the technical complexities of writing a book, even once you finished it, to actually get it published, very challenging.
So, you know, I should have asked this question to you when we started our conversation on your book, but tell me the you know, what was the background of using the words lost and found?
It's a good question. You know, the book is really a metaphorical journey. It's a journey. It's one of the journeys of my life, but it's also part of a journey through life. Some of that's about, you know, I mean, the book really starts off, even the journey is born out of some very challenging circumstances, which come to many of us. And I decided, I went through a lot of soul searching about the book, thinking how open to be. But I decided, look, there might be other folks who go, who have similar experiences, and they would appreciate the honesty. So the book starts off with, you know, adversity and challenges in career that then forced innovation and then looking for entrepreneurship. And then this, you know, what started accidentally, this adventure around China. But I guess during the process of that was really about resetting my values in life, learning more about me, resetting priorities, finding a new purpose. But in that as well, I found that often in some of those incredibly remote places where we were in China, and some of those places we were, you know, I just say this, I'll come back to your point in a second, but we were in a place, the car broke down in a place in Inner Mongolia, which is a Chinese province. Outer Mongolia is the country. So this place is a vast remote area. And there we were, the car broke down. It took like 5 hours to drive 150K across rough tracks, farm fields to reach us, get the car drivable, and then we have to do the same 5 hour journey back. But that place doesn't have a name. There's no human feature. So how he found us on this dirt track in Mongolia, in the grasslands, how he found us is remarkable, but he did. But all there is on the map is some words in Chinese. And that's not a place name. It just means no people, no people here.
Amazing.
And so in that kind of incredible remoteness, sometimes, you know, where there's no noise or no distraction, you really become so much more aware of yourself and the value of life and the privilege of having those experiences. And of course, often when you were like that, when we were in on the edge of trauma, perhaps not in severe trauma, but on the edge of trauma, those are things you actually remember. Those are the clearest memories of your trips and journeys. So it's really about the lost and found is about both losing myself in life and in China and finding myself in China and finding a new version of me in life. So that the book is this sort of metaphorical journey, really.
Well said. So next few questions are going to combine a little bit of entrepreneurship or business with your trip in China. My next question is, how do the cultural differences impact business practices between China and the West?
Well, I mean, some of this, if I'm honest, you know, I don't know if I'm fully qualified to speak on, but what I would say is, you know, the personality style of Chinese people is very developed and very sophisticated. I found found them very polite, very courteous, tough in negotiation, but also quite sensitive. And I think, you know, my advice for people doing it first time around would to be tactful and diplomatic. And I think Chinese people will do the same. Often I found if I bring, for example, my Western style, I realize you have a very international audience, but my Western style is quite direct and to the point.
Yeah.
And I think when you're working in China, I think it's helpful now to adapt that and to give more time to think. I think my experience is Chinese people consider matters very deeply, almost like in a circular review, and consider every possible angle, including a personal impact on them. Whereas in the West, we're more pragmatic and we just go, here it is, and make a decision quickly. So I think, you know, is it one adjusting one's cultural style, but definitely being respect, diplomacy, tact, and some gratitude as well, and enjoy the hospitality. I personally would say Chinese people are more hospitable than I am. I was quite embarrassed often thinking, I don't think I would be so hospitable. So there's some very significant cultural differences. Yeah. And I think particularly the one I'd say, which perhaps is obvious, is that to many who've experienced anything in China, is it's very important when you're working with senior people that if you have contrary views, that you should express them very diplomatically and privately, never publicly in front of those people.
Very well said. Well said. So let me now move to your other avatar as the co-founder and director of Entrepreneurs Hub. Tell me a little bit about Entrepreneurs Hub and what makes it a disruptor in the corporate finance space.
Yeah, I think some of it is the vision. It's a really interesting question. You know, Entrepreneurs Hub was born out of a vision, out of a sense that, you know, we realized actually that there was a gap. A lot of us had experience of corporate class mergers and acquisitions, corporate class corporate finance. And one of the things we realized was actually in the corporate space, it's very mature, very well developed. In the SME space, there's a real gulf between the advice an SME business owner would get in corporate finance and M&A compared to a corporate transaction. So if you like, our vision, our disruption was to say, look, this is a very staid market, you know, and it's ripe for a challenger. And so our disruption was to, if you like, synthesize corporate class transaction, but to make it accessible and affordable for SMEs. And that's exactly what we did. And I don't know that anyone's really copied that now, because it's quite involved. But I think also the other piece, which I think you didn't say, but I think is quite important, is it, like, businesses, entrepreneurs and businesses often start as family or friend entities. And it's quite important to say that, because some of your readers, it will encourage them. We literally sat down, my business partner, Malcolm Murray, who's a friend as well. We had lost touch for at least 10, if not more, years. Mm-hmm. And we basically got together and we went for a curry. And we sat down for a curry. And I kid you not, and I will use this part of a joke, because chicken tikka masala is an English dish inspired in England and relates to nothing in India, probably. But it's still one of the most popular food dishes in the UK now. But we sat down, and the story is we had our starters, and by the time the main course arrived, by the time the chicken tikka masala arrived, we decided to start the corporate finance function of Entrepreneurs Hub.
Amazing.
It was decided over a meal.
Fascinating. And how does Entrepreneurs Hub maintain its unique commercial proposition in a very competitive M&A space?
Yeah, I think, first of all, some of this might sound cliche, but they're sincere. I think, first of all, customer centricity, real focus on the customer, kind of obsessional with that. I mean, understanding the right customers for us, customer profiling, but really trying our best to look after our customers. I think the next thing is technical competence. We have some fantastic skills within the team. And as we grow, we have more, you know, very talented team members join. And that's been a great help. So technical competence is really, really important. We make a big investment in information and research. Research is absolute cornerstone of what we do. So there's a big investment and cost in that. But also, I guess two other things. First of all, great people. We really focus on hiring great people and very careful about hiring. And also the other thing, which is a kind of passion of mine, is really focusing on the next generation. We make it our business to create internships and work experience for, you know, people earlier on in their careers. We think that's important. And we've brought in, you know, a number of younger people who've stayed with us and grown and developed with the business.
Right.
So the next generation, both from a point of our own development, but also our corporate responsibility, is very important to us.
Well said. I have time for two more questions for you. My next question is that what strategies do you find most effective for scaling small and medium enterprises?
I think, first of all, I would say, you know, don't overextend. Make sure you don't overextend, get the right funding, keep focused on reality, do reality checks, have people who, maybe you've been successful, have people who can challenge that to make sure you're not starting to believe your own hype or that you're invincible. And I think the next thing that's very, very important is, in our business, because it's very people-centered, is have the right team for the next step of your journey. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you need to hire ahead of where you are and make sure you're finding ways to attract talent mm-hmm. to equip you for the next part of the journey, not just now. So I kind of phrase that as now, next, the future. You know, what do I need now? What will we need next? And what will we need for the future?
Very interesting. And you never know, given your background as an author and in entrepreneurship, your next book may just be on entrepreneurship. But my last question to you...
No, the next two titles, and I promise I will share them with you when they're...
Okay. Well, good luck. Good luck. My last question to you, Andrew, entrepreneurship is something which is now become an aspiration for a lot of young people.
Of course.
And a lot of my viewers and listeners are young. My question is, what key advice would you give to someone starting off on their entrepreneurial journey today?
Okay. Because I know it's the last question. So just, I guess, for brevity, it's really important, I think, that one gets mentorship and advisors. Mm. I think it's really, really important.
Yeah.
But I think if you said, for me, one of the most important things, and those, you know, I can think there are a couple of folks who really influenced me when I was in my 20s.
Mm.
And that's part of why I want to help the next generation now, to pay that forward.
Yeah.
So that did the same for me, that did for me, and I want to do the same. But I would say, if you said pick one thing, I would say the kind of pivotal thing for me was Pareto Law, the 80-20 principle.
Mm.
And it still shapes my thinking every day.
Mm.
Is realizing that only 20% of what I do is really impactful in my daily mm. outcomes. Yeah. And I focus more and more all the time on not trying to do everything,
mm.
but just focusing on those few things that are impactful and trying to do those really, really well.
Very interesting. And on that note, Andrew, and your wonderful lessons for entrepreneurs, get a mentor or an advisor. And I love the 80-20 law, which you have outlined so clearly. Only 20% of what we do impacts our daily life. So whatever you do, make sure you do that 20% really well. Thank you, Andrew, for speaking to me about your own journey. Thank you for this fascinating journey that you took me and all my viewers and listeners through about your trip in China. I mean, I'm sure there would be a few people who may get inspired to follow your tracks driving around in a country, because I've always believed driving is probably the best way to see any country. Thank you also for speaking to me about Entrepreneurs Hub and for giving us some very interesting pointers for entrepreneurs. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck.
Okay. Thank you, Ash. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.